The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to the programme. 4 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 8th of September, 2026. It's great to have you on board. We've a lot to cover today. Plenty of news about lots of sport too. Jim McGuinness signed up for another year. What's your views on that or anything else for that matter? Or perhaps there's an issue you wish to raise, some news you wish to pass on to us. Good news, we welcome that too. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25000. Give us a call either on 074 91 25000 or email comments at highlandradio.com. You can watch us as well. We're on the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland, across your mobile devices and on your smart TV and your Fire Stick. We're broadcasting on our Facebook pages and on X. And yes, as I said, I'm not sure if it's a peculiarity about the traffic in and around Letterkenny today, but we're being sent videos of long delays. I was checking the Google situation and what it is suggesting with the traffic this morning. I'm not sure how accurate this is. That stretch, that little stretch between the Dry Arch roundabout and into Letterkenny, 2.6 kilometres, 9 minutes to travel that at the moment. The overall journey from Stranola to Ballybuffet, Stranola, Ballybuffet to Letterkenny, 29 minutes in this morning's traffic. This is what the Google APIs are telling us. Milford to Letterkenny, 26 minutes. It's normally 22 without traffic. The greatest delays, we're being told by Google, 7 minute delays is Buncrana to Letterkenny. If that's your route, 47 minutes that is taking, but I'm not sure how accurate or otherwise that is. Google pretty much on the ball normally, but we shall see. Right, let's get to the papers this morning. The Irish Times. Do you remember that saying? And I think it was Leo Varadkar, wasn't it? And it was quite controversial at the time, where he says about, you know, we want to reward people who get up early in the morning. Well, it's been reused. There were mixed signals from government on the forthcoming budget yesterday, as Fianna Fáil ministers and TDs gathered in Tullamore, County Offaly, for the party's thinking ahead of the resumption of the Dáil next week. Fine Gael leader and Taoiseach Simon Harris promised that tax cuts in the budget would support people who get up early every morning and go to work, reprising a line used by Leo Varadkar during his campaign for the party leadership in 2017. In an address to the Mullingar Chamber of Commerce yesterday morning, Harris, who as Minister for Finance has responsibility for tax policy, promised that the government's commitment to support people who work hard would be reflected in a person's income tax package in the budget. He said, cutting business taxes and cutting income taxes are appropriate for the budget, which is set to be delivered in 4 weeks' time on October 6th. I think anything that would improve people's pay packets would be beneficial. People would see that as beneficial. So we shall see. Often what happens is that, you know, you lose on the swings and you gained on the roundabouts. I think what people want is the you know, an actual increase in the amount they take home for all of their work, and it not then to be chipped away by other things. Tax cuts, rich country, that's what we're being told is happening. That's what we're told, is what we're being told where we are. But yet child poverty continues to soar in this country, and soar it does. The Irish Independent tells us there's been a sharp rise in the number of children living in poverty despite strong growth in average incomes. The overall number of children living below the poverty line has risen to 200,000, an increase of 30,000, according to the ESRU. I mean, we don't need really to get any further context, but we had, what, 80,000 people in Croke Park on Saturday night, double that, and then stick another half in on top of that. And that's the amount of children in this country that are living under the poverty line. I mean, that's crazy. The ESRI said the government were very far from meeting its target for reducing child poverty to 3% by 2030 and called for a second tier of child benefit for poorer families once housing costs were added into the mix. The increase in the number of children living in poverty was even higher, with an additional 40,000 recorded in this category in 2024 when compared with the previous year. That's a rise of 23%. The ESRI said this was despite strong growth in average household incomes. But the average household incomes is the lie, because you've got people on good incomes and you've got people on crap incomes, and, you know, you get the average. And it's those lower income families where they need targeted supports that have 200,000 children living in poverty in Ireland. I mean, that they have to do something about that, don't they? And I think even to try and reduce that to 3% by 2030, reduce it to 0% by 2028 is what I would suggest they should do if we are as wealthy as we claim to be. The Irish Daily Mail, citizenship a privilege. This is the ongoing move by Jim O'Callaghan to tighten things up in this area. And I suppose, too, as the leadership contest continues to rumble under the surface within Fianna Fáil, you have, you know, some of the main players. I mean, who is there? Jim O'Callaghan, Derek Leary, Jack Chambers, though Jack Chambers still perhaps has a hangover from that presidential debacle. But these are some of the names that are being associated with it. And Jim O'Callaghan would like to see a win in this space, I'm sure, to strengthen his chances, if he so wished, to lead that party. So new rules around gaining Irish citizenship will require applicants to demonstrate the capacity to contribute to society, the Taoiseach has said. Minister for Justice and Migration, Jim O'Callaghan, will bring new measures to Cabinet tomorrow, tightening criteria for citizenship. It's expected to extend the time applicants must live here from 5 to 8 years and include language tests demonstrating proficiency in English. It's understood applicants may be required to prove they can contribute to society and the economy and avoid taking social welfare payments for a period before their application. A means test will be applied in order to determine if the applicant can be considered self-sufficient, and they will also be required to prove employment or capacity to gain employment. On to the Red Top tabloids now, and Ticketmaster has been accused of misleading commercial practice in connection with ticket sales for the sellout Oasis reunion concerts at Croke Park last year. I'm sure some of you, or at least some close to you, were at them. The case was before Judge Anthony Halpin at Dublin District Court yesterday and stems from an inquiry by the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission. The company faces two charges under Section 47 of the Consumer Protection Act surrounding information provided to concert goers who bought platinum tickets, which gave fans access to some of the most popular events at a price set by the organiser. The alleged offence relates to tickets for Noel and Liam Gallagher's packed gigs in Dublin in August 16th and 17th in 2025. We'll see what comes from that. And it doesn't go away, does it? It's 6-7. Is that in your house still? It's been around a while and it doesn't seem to be going away at all. It was the most searched for slang term in 2026 across Ireland. The kids craze 6-7 topping the list. And as I say, there's as many adults using it, I think, as there are kids. Word experts at unscramblers.com used Google Trends to discover the top trending slang terms and a search engine optimization analysis tool was also used to find the number of searches of slang over the years so far. Their study found that 6-7 had 39,400 searches, putting it top of the list. An example of brain rot internet humour, where the randomness of the phrase itself becomes funny. It originates from the song Don't 6-7 by, well, there's question marks about where it originated. But anyway, it went viral after a basketball player created a trending video about being 6'7", or 6'7" tall. Kids and teens scream and chant it often with exaggerated hand gestures. Second on the list was maxing 16,000-odd searches to go all in on improving a specific part of your life, like presenting maxing. Host maxing is what I could be searching up. Mogging is the other one, still popular, which is outclassing someone else by appearing more attractive, skillful or successful. So Caroline mogs me daily because she's so pretty would be the analogy. Right, let's go to Paul Brogan, coordinator, Buncrana Business Together and owner of Food for Thought. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, now you had an instrumental role alongside others in the formation of the Buncrana Businesses Together and the paper vouchers, and that's what we're going to talk about because it's really working out quite well, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It was an initiative we brought in last October to sort of give the town a little bit of a buzz before Christmas. And so far, we've sold over 100,000 euro, and that's off the paper voucher.
Now, what's the paper voucher? You mean that's a physical voucher, or what? Just explain that
to
me.
No, the paper voucher just comes in two vouchers. It comes in a 10 euro voucher sale and a 20 euro voucher sale. So if you're looking for a 50, we have to give you 2 20s and a 10.
Right,
if you're looking for a 100, we have to give you 5 20s. So there's a lot of paper, a lot of work in that.
Yes, and
compared to the card.
And why did you go down that route? Was it just as a launch to get it off the ground?
Yeah, there was a timing thing there that we only had a meeting in September, and we formed the group, and we got 13 local businesses to donate a sum to get these printed and to get them out there. So we wouldn't have had the time. The other program takes anything between 6 months to 12 months to get up and running. So we were limited to time at the start. It was just to give it a boost to see what the appetite was from the public in vouchers locally. And it proved that there was an appetite there. They bought them. They thought it was great. Best thing ever. But to move that up a scale, we have to go from the paper voucher to the digital and physical card voucher.
But what this did prove and what it did achieve is ring fencing money that would be spent in businesses in Buncrana. You know, rather than say, for instance, a different type of a card which could be bought anywhere or used online, this is a scheme that, you know, is great for businesses because you sell these gift cards, that money gets spent with participating businesses.
Yeah, that's the great thing about it, is that the money, as you say, is ring-fenced, so this money cannot leave the town. And even if you're not part of the Buncrana Business Together, or you're not a business that has a card machine for the next program, your business will still benefit because other businesses are doing well. They're paying their staff, they're hiring more staff. So at the end of the day, everybody wins. The people buying the cards wins, the people receiving the cards wins, and Buncrana Town wins. So that's the idea. It's a proven system that's available in other towns. We were just a little bit behind the run because of COVID and Brexit and other things that was going on, you know.
Yeah, so the next logical step, obviously, although I like the idea of being able to break down a 50 into 220s and a 10, but anyway, that's old school. The evolution of
with the digital card system, you can break that 50 down to 10 fives.
Exactly.
Because there's 50 euro on your card, whereas with the 220s and a 10, if you go into somewhere and you only want to spend a 5 with a 20 euro card, for them to give you back 15 euro cash, that defeats the purpose because that cash can be spent somewhere else.
Exactly, yes.
So right, this is a better idea.
It is, yeah. It is. It's the natural evolution, of course.
Now,
it also makes it more accessible, more sexy and more modern, right? So you would expect, presumably, you know, its usage to grow. And businesses to start saying, right, this is a handy way actually for us to maybe give a bonus to staff or what have you. Where do you see it going from here, over what timeline?
Well, there's a lot of benefits here. Like, you know, first of all, there's going to be 4 ways that you can purchase or receive the card, to purchase the card. First of all, we will be selling them in Food for Thought. That's really the physical card. If you're looking to buy a gift for somebody, a wedding present, a birthday prize, somebody that's retiring, you can buy them through us at the shop. Then you can actually get what they call a load-up card. So this will be a blank card that will be left in designated shops in the town that's open 7 days a week. So on a Sunday morning, if you're invited to a party, you can go into that shop and you can lift a blank card ticket home with you, and you can load it up through your phone, and then hand them the card that evening as if you had the card all along. Then online, there's 2 ways online. There's one, if you have people in Australia, America, Canada, New Zealand, they can go online and they can get a card delivered to their parents at Christmas time. We don't have to do any work with that. There will be an online site from the supplier, Myconex. And then the last way is if you wanted to get a digital card, and that's a card that you can put digitally onto your phone, that can be downloaded from that site as well. Mm. And again, we don't have to handle that sale, but it goes through our sales as regards Buncrana.
Yeah, and it kind of comes at a time, I think, where And I'll frame it this way, and you can contradict me if I'm wrong, but Buncranagh seems to be going through a purple patch. You know, the main street is vibrant, and there are businesses off the main street, don't get me wrong. I think it's benefited quite significantly from the nighttime economy initiative, and there are major plans for developments in and around Buncranagh. So it does seem to be coming at the right time, as I say, through a purple patch for Buncranagh as a whole. You know, it's the main street and surrounding areas in the hinterland.
Yeah, well, I think that was part of the objective from the meeting that we had last year, was that, you know, we are the business people of Buncranagh, and we can't be relying on councils or other places to do the work for us. So what we done was we came together, and that was the meaning of the name, Buncranagh Businesses Together. And there is that feel-good factor because the vouchers were sold, the vouchers were repaid. And, you know, this new system is costing $25,000 to get up and running. And that was funded by the 10 local businesses that is put out in that press release. Now, they will get their money back over a period of 3 to 4 years. But the idea was, if we sit back and we wait and we go for grants and we wait and we go for more grants, we're losing a step here. So we just decided to bite the bullet. Go for it, do it ourselves. And it is positive for the whole town. As I say, even if you're not a member, your business will benefit and the people are benefiting. And so Buncranagh is on the up. There's a lot of good groups in Buncranagh. We're just one of them.
All right.
But we're the business type. Yeah.
Good stuff. And where's the go-to place to, I know you mentioned businesses and different ways one can be acquired, but if people want sort of an overview of the information, where online can they go?
Yeah, this is a press release, so you know we're on a schedule here. So at the moment, production is taking place. I don't expect to be physically selling cards or online until probably mid to the end of October. We have to go through different hoops, which we've gone through. We've got EML gone through, and we've been accepted by MasterCard, and we have the money paid. So it's just a process.
Okay.
Well, then we don't expect the cards to be launched officially. We're going to do what they call a soft launch, just make sure that the whole system works. So we don't expect it till after Halloween, because we don't have too much pressure on ourselves. The places that you can get the card then redeemed in, there'll be two ways of that, three ways actually. There'll be a poster on the shops that's involved, a sticker on the window to say that they accept them. Mm. They can use that for their Facebook page. We will have a paper list of all the people who are involved in it. And we will also have it on the gift card, not the little digital gift card, but the little insert that goes with the card. Mm-hmm. And that'll give other information. It'll also has a QR code, and you can check that QR code for all the participating shops that'll accept your card.
And just one question in relation to that. Can every shop or business, if they wish, participate in this?
Not really, because first of all, you must have a card machine.
No, but can they acquire it? No, is this open to everyone, or is this for a particular group of businesses?
Is this, or do you mean for to buy or to accept?
To accept.
Well, you see, for you to accept a digital card, you must have a point of sale card machine.
Yeah.
And not all businesses have point of sale card machines. The likes of an accountant, the likes of a solicitor, the likes of a painter, the likes of a mechanic, they may not accept cards.
But
so
if they
do, can't actually.
But if they do, they could.
Oh, if they do. Yeah. If they do and they want to join, there's no restrictions. But you must have a machine. Like, it makes common sense. If you've no machine, you can't take the card. So
no, it's just that every business in Buncranagh that accepts cards is welcome to be part of this initiative. That's the only clarification I was looking for there.
Yeah.
Okay, great stuff, Paul. We'll speak to you again closer to the time of official launch. Thank you, Paul Brogan. Coordinator Buncranagh of Buncranagh Business Together and owner of Food for Thought. Right, how much of these vouchers went to iPass Centre, and is that representative of the true value of them? I don't know. I don't know how many. I don't know if they know how many. It really doesn't matter where they go as long as they're spent in Buncrana. It's about spending in the businesses in Buncrana, is it not? Has anyone else seen Isaiah Burke's video about the new maths curriculum? Apparently the new curriculum means that students will not be equipped for maths at third level. Maybe we should all listen to him, or maybe we should listen to lots of different people and come to some sort of a consensus. I don't think it's ever good, and I don't even know who Isaiah Burke is. I presume he might be a member of the Burke family. I don't know. But, you know, everyone has their own interpretation of stuff. I think we can't just follow one person on social media and believe everything they say to be an absolute fact. You know, check it out with another maths teacher to see what they say as well. Greg, in relation to the family income and rewarding the people who get up to work, for the people who are on a lower wage, lots of them qualify for the FIS, known as Family Income Support. This brings these families up to a very good wage and also gives them all the benefits, medical cards, school bus and all the grants related to third level. Then you have the families who don't qualify for this, paying for everything. These are the families who are struggling and certainly need a bit of relief in the budget. And I think it's those families, if the truth be told, that Fine Gael is talking about, that latter group of families. Met an e-scooter on Saturday and Monday in Buncrana on the footpath. No helmet, no high-vis. Three rules broken right away. Is it up to me to ring the Gardaí, and where do we show example? I mean, if you want to ring the guards, you can. That's your right. Was it Saturday? The laws on high-vis came in on Saturday. So, yep, those people should have been wearing high-vis. 33 minutes from the dry arch to the pole star, 8:30 to 9:03. So that's the dry arch. My word, that is that's unworkable, isn't it? That's not sustainable if that's the way things are not going to be going forward. Or maybe there's a particular incident today. Back to the child poverty issue. As a carer for my child, I'm so deflated with the government and their wording. I get up early. I also get up multiple times every single night of the week to care for my child while they're having seizures. But yet I'm currently under review for my carer's payment, which is already under the living wage. I'm so tired of this absolute cruelty and BS coming from the above powers that be. And this is exactly why when Leo Varadkar used this terminology, it was controversial at the time, because it does, it drives you, what it drives us to identify, who are we? Are we the people he's talking about? Are we not? You know, you clearly get up early in the morning and get up in the middle of the night, and you're being underserved by the state. There's no doubt about that. Yet I understand how you might feel that he's not talking about you. And that's the importance of language. Greg, I just wonder what other parents think of this. I got an email from my daughter's school yesterday that every student will start the school year with 100 points. As the year goes, students will have points taken as forms of punishment. All punishment comes out of that 100 points. No homework will see a deduction. Late to school, another deduction. It's like a communist regime. How is this acceptable in today's world? Oh, toughie that, actually. I think children like targets. I think that could be used as a motivator at home. To be honest, I don't know. I've never heard of this before, and I'm only seeing it for the first time. It doesn't seem the worst idea in the world, because I think, you know, sometimes we as parents need something to incentivize our children or to hold them up against, if you know what I mean. And if you go another 10 points knocked off or 5 points knocked off, and you can then say, have the conversation, listen, you need to do your homework, or you're going to have to get up a bit earlier because we're getting into later. I don't know. Part of me thinks it could work, and part of me thinks it could be a good tool for a parent. I don't know. What do you think? Throw it out to the audience. I just hadn't seen that before, so I wanted to sort of consider it myself. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. Do you like that scheme? You start off with 100 points deducted for any impropriety. Vaping in the toilets, I'd say that wipes 70 off straight away. Right, let's take a break. We're going to have reaction from our GAA correspondent, Brendan Devaney. Why do I keep going? Why do I roll the R with Brendan every time? It's actually annoying me now, so God knows what it must be like as a listener. We're going to be getting the reaction from Brendan Devaney to the news that Jim McGuinness is staying on for at least another year. Just a quick update on that road traffic collision. Gardaí received a report of a two-vehicle road traffic collision at Rafaux de Menz this morning at 8 a.m. It involved a tractor and a bus. No injuries reported, which is good news. The road is blocked at the moment and Gardaí are at the scene. So a bus and a tractor in collision at 8 a.m. this morning. No injuries reported, but severe traffic disruption. So severe the road is actually blocked. Right, it was ratified last night at the county board meeting. Jim McGuinness is staying on for another year. Brendan Devaney, presenter of the DL Debate, joins us with reaction to that. Brendan, good morning to you.
Yes, Greg. How things, boy?
I'm good. What do you think?
Listen, that's to be good news. Greg, you know, Jim's record is something else. I mean, when you look at his entire time there, you know, the five Ulsters in 7 years and you know, the most competitive provincial championship of the lot. Obviously, we had All-Ireland in the first time, two All-Ireland appearances. We've had one this time. We did obviously have a year last year that we weren't expecting, even though we did win the league title. I think from the back of the defeat in the All-Ireland final, the manner of it last year was a big year for Donegal. And obviously, as we've spoke many times, Greg, on the show about, we obviously came in too fast and hard at it in terms of how we performed in the league. Then we had the tough defeat to Down at home, the home defeat to Cork, and then, you know, the Dublin defeat after extra time. So, listen, after everything that he's done, you know, most counties want managers from their own county, and there's very little what you call high-level managers out there. There isn't like a conveyor belt or a load of people knocking on the door wanting to take your own county team. So when you have someone like Jim there, and obviously his influence with Michael Murphy as well, how that situation all comes together, and you look at the attitude of the Donegal players when he's in there, everybody wants to play, they want to be involved, they know they're going to be playing in all the big games. So we just have to say last year was a bit of a write-off. But with the new rules, I think for Jim coming in next year, it is a massive year to kind of pull back and get ready for a big championship assault and really get the best from this team that we didn't see in championship last year.
I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of everything, but I'll just pose the question. I mean, players, we expect players to adapt. Players have to adapt to certain scenarios, to certain realities, and that's the role of the management. Do you think Jim McGuinness will have to adapt his approach? And because he's so thorough in how he does things, do you think he'll be inclined to adapt from last year and change the way we do things?
Well, the thing is, Greg, who's going to try and copy Mayo? Mayo played the new rules to their absolute limit in terms of going after teams and in terms of high press, high intensity, and just almost like letting the leash off. Now, what we've had for so many years in football is an over-tactical game, which has really brought the game down. And Donegal were one of the teams to the fore, Armagh. I mean, Kieran McGinney, you can see when the new rules come on after he won the All-Ireland, the last thing he wanted was a rule change, because Ulster teams have become very good at that defensive way of playing football, and it was really about stopping teams playing and trying to break into space. Now we have a completely different game, so you're going to have to adapt. And we see a Croke Park, Greg, in big matches and against the better teams. It's attack first now. We were defence first. It's all about attack first now. Sure, you're going to get your shape and man-to-man tackling, but it's about your press and it's about going after teams. So that's the change you're going to have to see in Donegal.
Will we see it, do you think, really, is the core of the question?
If you want to be ultimately successful, you will. Maybe not so much in Ulster. I still think in a lot of tight Ulster team games, people will play still the percentages a lot. But I think really there has to be that element of the game where you kick past the ball and you squeeze up and really go after teams. Now, we did have elements of that in our play last year, Greg. I don't really think that is necessarily where we fell down. I just think we ran out of energy because we came at the season very hard. And then everything after that, Greg, if you don't really have that kind of that energy and that real championship zip, then anything you're trying is it's not going to come off. So I think the big thing for Donegal next year is come into the league, come in late, really, come in, get your way through the league. It wouldn't even bother me if Donegal were relegated next year. It's about the championship. It's all about preparing for a big championship assault. I think that has to be the mantra for Jim going in. And Greg, you look across the rest of the counties, you know, Paddy Talley, a lot being made of him in Mayo. Our own Paul Durkin's down there as well. You know, Cian O'Neill, obviously, he was in McCary. He was with Galway, he was with Kerry before that. You know, Jason Sherlock and Roscommon, Conley Gilligan, and we are mad. Like, a lot of people are saying, do you reach out to someone? Do you bring in other coaches? And then Donegal geographically, sometimes that isn't the easiest thing to do. But is there going to be a shake-up in the backroom team to freshen it? There's a lot of rumours about that around the county.
How do we make sure that we don't hit a cliff edge? That, in other words, we don't sort of see, you know, really good players sticking about for one last year. And if Jim McGuinness does the year and then hopefully leaves with success, that we don't sort of then start at point one of a bit of a building process. Have we enough quality in the team at sort of semi-experienced and new players coming through to avoid, you know, a Jim McGuinness hangover when next year's over, if that makes sense?
Well, I guess that would depend, you know, on how next year goes. If it's very successful and the guys have really brought into to a Jim system, you know, maybe Jim himself would like to stay at that point. Like, if we have what you would call a successful year, sure, then, you know, when guys are used to, and you've seen that be Jim's last term, the previous term, and when the situation was so professional and the training was so high, it's very hard sometimes for somebody to come in and immediately take up that slack. But in terms of the talent, Greg, yeah, listen, there's huge talent all around the county. I think that's a question for what happens next year. But certainly I think for the lads now all playing club championship, that there's an unbelievable amount of youth talent out there. And next year, that's what I'm saying, it's about maybe bringing some of that through, about trying things in the league and not being overly worried about the outcomes of that to get ready for the championship, because the game has changed dramatically, Greg, and it's up to Donegal, you know, to come in and get the best of their team in the way the new game's played.
There was some crazy results in the championship and the league to some extent, but the championship where it really matters, you know, inexplicable poor performances. And it wasn't just Donegal, actually. It was sort of right across. Is there anything needs to be done to sort of address that, where we can look unbeatable on one day and look like, you know, the minnows the next?
Yeah, well, I think that goes back to what I was saying previously, Greg. You know, certainly, I suppose, with the down game, you know, no one's, after the league final, like Donegal were praying for an All-Ireland tilt, but we absolutely destroyed Kerry on the day. And a lot of us were scratching our head going, how did that happen? I was taking anything away from the boys. But certainly you had a Kerry team that were getting ready to play championship and weren't at the pitch of it, whereas we were absolutely flying. So I think if we can get back to that way of playing, but into the championship, I think that's exactly what we need. You know, we've seen the very best of us too early on in the season. So I think after that, Greg, that was the problem. And probably the boys were trying their best to get up. So we've seen an odd bit of performance and play, you know, down in Killarney, for example, you know, big game to Kerry away. It probably just was enough to get a level of performance out of the boys. But as you've seen then, when we were up against it, Greg, particularly, you know, second half against Dublin, you could see the team fading a bit. But within the extra time, you could see the legs weren't there. So I think that's what it's all about, Greg. It's about getting the timing of the season right. And listen, Jim and his crew will know that.
The division is a tricky, it's a sticky wicket though, because, you know, say you try things out or you blood players or what have you and you end up going deep in it, you know, the deeper you go, the better you look, the harder it is not to see it out and then carry that into the championship. It's a problem, it's a difficult one.
Yeah. Here's one thing, like Mayo came to Letterkenny last year. And early on in the game, they were trying this full court press thing, and they almost caught Donegal out a few times. And I was looking and going, you know, that is very close to working. There's something very interesting in how they're playing. Donegal were obviously going really well at the time. We have a lot of nippy players, hard to shut down, you know, with half forwardy type players around the pitch. And we got away from their press, and we eventually rolled over them and beat them quite convincingly. But then coming the end of the season, you had a very different Mayo team in the All-Ireland final, and the things that they've been trying out then really came to the fore. So I think that's what Donegal need to look at. They need to get patterns of play in, and sure, if there's not league game goes against us, Greg, I wouldn't mind that. You need to blood players. We need to get a style of play that's going to suit playing big games, you know, at Clonus, hopefully, and then into Croke Park. I think that's the thing. But listen, I'm sure Jim and them are all very aware of that there, but I think very much having the energy right at the right time of the season is the key.
Yeah, maybe after, I mean, it was a successful season in a way, and disappointing that we as fans sort of have to reset our expectations too. I mean, even the most ardent of fans can be a bit bandwagony at times as well too, so we need to...
There's a bit of devil's advocate out there, all right, Greg, but listen, we're always glass half full, Ben, and, you know, having Jim in, listen, Greg, when people say Jim didn't come in, what's your options? I would say people, you
oh,
know.
Yeah, so, I can't imagine anyone saying this is a bad move. No, yeah, there's no doubt about that.
I mean, as I say, Greg, five ulcers in 7 years, you know, and from a time, there was a time there where we really struggled. So you got to look at the thing properly. And listen, I think last year, right off, let's come back in. And with himself, and of course, I have to mention Mickey McCann in as well, 10th year's hurling boss. What a period he's overseen. The two boys, absolutely phenomenal. Listen, I'm delighted they're back, you know, and really looking forward to next season.
Yep, same as. And, you know, there are counties would give their eye teeth for Jim McGuinness. We're blessed. And he's from the county as well. Amazing. All right, brilliant stuff. Thanks very Cheers much, you. Brendan. I've been asked to mention, and I'm happy to do so, that Donegal Hospice, a fundraiser for Donegal Hospice, Bubbles and Music Bingo. It's an evening of games and prizes. It's all in aid of the Donegal Hospice on Sunday, the 13th of September, 3 p.m, €5 per bingo card. So there you go. Right, now I can say good morning to Rosanna Brown. Good morning to you, Rosanna.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Lovely to speak to you. How are you keeping?
Very well, thank you.
And congratulations on how everything is going for you. It's wonderful to see.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
And people might recognise your surname. You are the niece of a friend of the show, Dana Rosemary Scanlon.
Yes, I am indeed.
Okay, very good. So there's talent running through your veins anyway. We know that for a fact. I was down watching Westlife on Saturday. Katie Taylor was fighting as well. You with Rua toured with Westlife, didn't you?
We did. It was fantastic. It was such an amazing experience touring with them. Like, obviously, the crowds that they pull, but the boys are so lovely. And the show is just fantastic. We actually ended up watching the shows most nights because it was just so enjoyable.
Yeah, very good. How do you balance a singing career and an acting career? Because both are pretty intense, right? And you're only one person.
I think I'm still trying to figure that out, if I'm being really honest. I think there is definitely, obviously, having to figure out the balance for yourself. And I kind of tend to go with my gut instinct, and I try and be as... I really try and be as organized as I humanly possibly can be. But... Sometimes it doesn't work. So it's an ever-flowing thing that I'm trying to catch up with myself. But it's good, and I love what I do. And so that's the main thing. I think when you love what you do, I'm just so blessed to be able to do it, you know. And so I make the time.
Yes, performing on stage, though, you know, into the recording studio, I know it is an arduous enough process, but it's almost like instant gratification compared to sort of the potential long drawn out production of a TV show or a movie.
Yeah.
That's the switch I would struggle with. I don't care how organized you are.
I don't mind. I think when you're on a set and you're acting, there is almost instant gratification, especially when you're working with somebody and you have that feeling and that feedback straight away. Obviously you don't get to see it straight away, but you definitely get that co-creational experience straight away. And it's play. It's fun. It's play. But you're very right in that when you're in the studio, you get to hear stuff back straight away and make the changes that you want to make. Whereas you kind of, you know, when you've been on set and you've acted, you kind of give it up to the editors and the directors and hope that you did the job that, you know, they needed you to do.
Your most recent work that we have access to is the film Pressure. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Pressure, the film. It's out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It is the 72 hours leading up to D-Day, where Eisenhower has to make the decision on whether to go or not go on the 5th of June. And he brings in James Stagg, a meteorologist, to bring in the weather report. And so the only thing that wasn't working for them was the British weather.
Now, early reports are that it's amazing. Right. I'm just curious, when you're working on a project, and I'm asking you maybe reflect on other projects that you thought were amazing and maybe they turned out not quite as amazing as you anticipated. But this is being incredibly well received. Do you get a sense of that on set? Because you're very many stages ahead of the final project. But I'm just curious, do you know when you're in something that is pretty special?
I think for that set, yeah. The actors in it, like Andrew Scott and Damian Lewis and Brendan Fraser, Chris Messina, Kerry Condon, I'm kind of like, how can this not be? Like, they're just absolutely incredible actors. And when you're watching them work together and you're like, I'm a part of this, it is, there is that air of just this brilliance of actors on set, but that it isn't grandiose. It's like they're really, really bringing everything they can to those characters, and it's a group effort. And so I think on this set, I did kind of pinch myself a little bit because I was just like, this is amazing. And you only hope that it ends up being really good. But I think the story in this was so good, and just the characters were so fantastic that there was a feeling of that, yeah.
Yes, and I'm not saying it's claustrophobic from a viewer's perspective, but it's tense and it's enclosed. Obviously, is that on the set, or is it a big open set and the wonders of cinematography create this environment for us, the viewer?
Well, actually, we filmed it all in the same building. So they used the different rooms in the building, and the main scene that I'm in, we are like in an underground cellar, and it was a very, very like closed kind of off area. And they actually also have used some of the original footage from World War II that they've got from the National Archives, and they've put that into the film. So if, when you go and see it and you think, oh, that kind of color's slightly off, they really wanted to bring in some of the real footage that they had. And so it's been wonderful to see that actually they've not used, crazy sets to make this. They wanted to use the real life thing.
Yeah, it's a lesson maybe for other filmmakers, though it's apples. It depends on the film you're making, of
Yeah,
course.
of course.
Right, just going back to your childhood, if you don't mind. Your dad's from Derry, your granny from Burt, so you'd be very familiar
Yeah.
with both areas, holidayed in both areas, right?
Yeah, I don't think there was ever an Easter, a summer holidays, Christmas. I was always there. Like I did the Derry Fash from when I was 5 until I was 17, until I was like, no, no more. I can't.
Okay. And Camille, what's coming up? I mean, obviously, pressure, keeping the eyes open. But what's coming up for you in the future? What are you working on at the moment?
Working on a lot of solo music, which I'm very excited about. Just had a single, Awake, which was released at the end of July, which is a good fun one for me. I like to really sing about feelings, and this was just a bit more fun. So it was really nice to have that over the summer. And then I have a song coming out soon called Yes, which I'm really excited about. It's a song that I wrote about me saying yes to my now husband. And there's so many love songs and there's so many wedding songs, and I'd not really seen a song from the female point of view of being proposed to. You're the only two people in the entire world and everything slips away. And so I really wanted to have that moment forever. And so that's coming out, I think, at the end of October. And then I have some stuff I'm working on in America, film-wise, which is in pre-production. And it's all really exciting. And I'm very, very grateful that I get to do this. And it's honestly, it's you've worked so hard for things, and when you see them coming together, I'm really excited for the stuff I have coming up.
Yes, and it seems you have this lovely balance of being able to be creative individually, but also part of a greater creative process as well, and having the time and the weather to do so.
Yes.
Okay, right. Listen, lovely to speak to you. Thank you so much. Continued success. It's fantastic to watch on. We're claiming you, by the way, just 100% as one of ours, right?
Good.
Okay, look after yourself. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so
Bye-bye. Bye.
much. Have a
Lovely
good
to
day.
chat to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Rosanna Brown there, Hollywood superstar. And we bring it all to you here on The Greg Hughes Show, Go from Brendan Devaney waffling on his phone to Rosanna Brown about to star in what's going to be one of the biggest films of the year. But when you read the description of it, it's kind of part of the description is this: high-stakes military control room monitoring the vital weather. Monitoring the vital. What is this, like Alan O'Reilly from the Carlo Weather Channel? No, it's not. It's a critical part in history. And those weather predictions at that time were very, very significant, because if they'd gotten it wrong, the consequences would have been great. But anyway, great to see Rosanna Brown there, and great to get a chat to her. I was joking, Brendan. How do you text me so quick? Waffling, I mean chatting. Sorry, Brendan. Don't knock me out, sunshine. So we heard from a parent earlier who received an email about a infraction system at their school. The student starts off with 100 points and there are deductions for being late, missing homework, I presume other things as well. I had not heard of it before, so I'm still trying to process what this all means. One listener says, fantastic idea with the 100 points. Everyone starting with positive points, which means if you lose some points at the beginning, you don't automatically go into negative points. These points are only allocated after previous interventions. It allows students to take control of their own behaviour. Your listener forgot to mention that you also can get positive points. So students can improve on negative behaviours and get rewards for positive behaviour. Excellent system, and schools have been using it for years. And other children shouldn't be punished. They should be encouraged. Well, let's see what Tony thinks. Hi, Tony.
Yeah. Good morning, Greg. I am incensed by the negativity in this system because I hate to hear negativity with subtraction. When they go into school, they lose points, I would love to see just a building of positivity where you go and earn points and you build and build on your good behavior, no matter what it is, you know, like good academically or being kind to other students in your class or being good at sport and punctuality and all the rest of it, you know, all the good things that happen in life, not just concentrating on bad behavior and negativity and subtracting every day. It's earning points. It's going forward, you know, being positive. I thought we had trying to get rid of the negativity that I had when I was a child at school. And that's probably why I'm so excited about this, because I don't want to see this still continue. Like, I was brought up in the primary school in Donegal, in Moncranagh, where I still live. And I've been away for years, but I'm back here. And you'll know by my accent that, you know, just fear of hell and loss of heaven. It was all negativity. And we were frightened. I was frightened as a child at school. And I would love to see bouquets being thrown at children now to encourage them to move forward and build your points. What about if a child ended up with 500 points, the best in the school, the great celebration?
But that's still,
100.
But Tony, you know, that still creates a hierarchy. So you have one child floundering on 100 points and another excelling at 500 points. The child on 100 points is still going to feel disadvantaged. Yes. So to follow through your logic, surely there'd be no points.
Good point. You know, maybe they should find other ways of encouraging children. But, you know, we live in a competitive society and we're not going to change that. And human nature is competitive as well. So some people will always be ahead and some people will always be behind. So maybe that's another little lesson for people, for us all, that we shouldn't be comparing with our next door neighbours or that. We should be just doing the best we can.
Okay, but let me put it to you, then, Tony. I'm getting the sense of what your what going to school was like for you. In terms of fear and perhaps even a bit of corporal punishment singling out or putting kids at the back of the class and all that stuff. So I kind of get a sense of what your school life was like. But at the same time, Tony, is this not just a little bit like that? In other words, let's get kids competitive with each other. Let's get them talking about how many points they have. You know, let's build a bit of resilience back into them. We never want to go back I missed it. I was lucky, actually, but not far off it. Maybe one generation removed from the type of school, Tony, you went to, if I'm guessing correctly, right? So, you know,
yes,
a little bit of peril, a little bit of, you know, competition. Is there not an argument for that when we're seeing so many children coming out of school lacking, you know, a bit of tenacity, lacking a little bit of resilience?
Right. A good point. There is a bit of lack of resilience. But I think that positivity and building points is a good thing, because let me tell you, I'm still working with young people online, tutoring you know, even though I'm retired, and they're apprentices. Yes, they're not primary or secondary. They're apprentices, electrical apprentices. So I still get this from them. I am still working with them on this positivity and on being treated badly and negatively in the classroom. And it's still going on, and I am very annoyed that we're not encouraging and a bit of encouragement at home and a bit of encouragement right through education works. It absolutely works.
Okay, but where do you get that bit of struggle that teaches you that life isn't constant pats on the back, Tony? Life isn't constant.
Yeah.
You know, that when you leave your training and you actually go into a real life apprenticeship in electricity or whatever it might be, you know, that everyone's not going to be nice to you all the time. Managers are going to say, no, you actually need to do this. You need to be in on time. You need to have, you know, your work done. Where's that happening? And I get where you're coming from, and I love your attitude, Tony, and I would say you're an amazing educator, don't get me wrong. But where's the reality check on that? Life is not actually being patted on your back until you're 18.
Well, Greg, I'm sorry to tell you that it's tough out there for young people. It's very tough, and they are not... far from getting toughened up whenever they're going through, they're being pushed down an awful lot of time. And it's still going on. I mean, that is still going on. When I was an apprentice, we used to say to each other, going back 60 years, apprentices, the lowest form of life, you know, and now it's better than that. But I'm sorry to say that it's tough out there. The early morning and the long commutes and the working all day, and they're only very young and they're starting out, and they're not even getting minimum wage because they're under 20.
I understand that, Tony, and I get you, but like you all also know in the industry.
Sorry, I'm going off. We're back to the point.
I want to tease something out with what you're just saying, Tony, because in the industry that you're tutoring people for, like I know for a fact some of the big players are pivoting to try and retrain 30, 40, 50-year-old electricians because of the effort that's required to build up resilience in the newer staff.
Yes. I agree with you. There is a challenge here for us building resilience in people, and it's a tough one. But you know what? We don't want to make them the way we were. I have realized this now that giving out about young people because they weren't like us is not the answer. They have different challenges, different attitude.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in front of a class and there was apprentices and they stood up and they said to me, Tony, I don't think us, right? Or Tony, why are you talking to us like that? I was just stunned. I just was amazed at them. I admired them because me, I cowered, and all my colleagues and I was class captain. I was
Are you sure, Tony, they haven't beaten you down? Because, you know, you're the educator and they're challenging you, saying, why are we speaking like that?
I love that. But, you know, that's them standing up for themselves, you know?
I get you.
That's them standing up for themselves, and we need that. And they had a different attitude. We are not low life. We are just as good as you, and we are important. I love that.
Yeah, but they're not as good as you, because you're the person with the knowledge imparting it on them, they should be the receptacles.
Talking about, you know.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. Anyway, listen, I don't disagree with you, Tony. I'm pushing back a little bit to tease out the conversation.
Hey, come here.
So that's
you
all
know
I'm
the
doing.
Thing about,
yeah.
Yeah, no, you're dead right to question, because, you know, obviously we're all trying to do the best. But I'm saying for the young people, it's better to build points. It's better to build positivity. And, you know, love comes into this, and kindness that never came into our life as young people when I was young. Like, I'm sorry to harp back at that, but, you know, pushing forward, we need to encourage in a different way. And I know the smartphone and all that has taken over the lives of people, and they don't need to respond in the same way as they did before, and they don't need the same skills. And that might be damaging to the brain on the long term, but who knows? We're not smart enough to even know that.
Maybe there's a halfway house where we can have positive...
Balance is a great thing in life,
Tony, lovely to chat to you, actually, by the way. I really appreciate it. Andy, how are you getting on? What do you think of this system?
I don't think it's a bad thing. I think people have a... There's too much emotion around punishment from my perspective. And, you know, punishment doesn't have to be unpleasant. It doesn't have to be something aversive. It can just be lack of access to something that the kid wants to do, do you know? Mm-hmm. And this removal of points, it is just a form of punishment, but the purpose of it is to reduce behaviour.
Bad behaviour.
It doesn't have to be bad behaviour, unwanted behaviour. You know, if you do something and you lose access to something you want to do, then it's going to change your behaviour in the future. Isn't that the object of exercise?
I think and we have to learn about life. That's the point I was trying to make to Tony. We do have to learn that life is not a box of chocolates. I mean, maybe it is, but life is not always easier. We get knocked down, and then we have to get up. We have to keep walking, and we might get knocked down, and we get up, and we keep going. And at what point in the growing up process are we learning that now?
Well, we probably aren't, but it all gets clouded in too much emotion. And I mean, really, what gets rewarded gets repeated. And what gets measured, you know, gets done, as the cliché say.
Because even the words you use there, punishment, there's a historical connotation to that in this country, right? Because I mean, what goes before? Corporal, you know, physical.
Yeah.
That word has associations to it. Well, really, what this is about is saying, you know what? If you don't do your homework and you come in with your excuses, and we've all done it, and you fake your parent's signature, we've all done that too, I'm sure, at some point or other, or whatever it might be, that you're going to lose 10 points. You can win them back with good behaviour, but you're going to be... my mind is not formed on it, Andy. I'm teasing it out with Tony beforehand and with you now, but I can see some advantage, and I can see some parental advantage in it as well, in terms of, you know, using it as encouragement at home.
It's probably based on what's called the quadrant of operant conditioning, which was devised by a psychologist called B.F. Skinner in the United States, I think probably the 1920s, all right? Yeah. And before that, behavioral scientists have been working forever on this. But it's, you know, you have the four quadrants: positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, positive punishment, negative punishment. And the negative and positive in that has nothing to do with emotion. It's to do with adding or subtracting. So you have a behavior. If you add something good, if you add a reinforcer, then that behavior's likelihood is going to get stronger. If you add a punishment, that behavior will decrease, right? But I mean, the important distinction is the punishment does not have to be unpleasant.
Okay.
Disappointment is a negative punishment. You know, you lose something and it decreases the behavior. It's the emotion around punishment that people can't get their head around. You know, it doesn't have to be a slap on the wrist. It doesn't have to be a smack on the bum. It can just be loss of access to something. So say you're late three times. You can't play in the football team at the weekend, or you can't play in the football team. That is a negative punishment because you've removed something to decrease the behaviour.
Okay. Yep, I see it.
You see what I mean?
Whereas if you
say, you know, if you are on time and you have your homework done for 3 weeks in a row, then you get your points back. That's positive reinforcement because you're adding something to increase the behaviour.
Okay. I presume that's the logic behind the whole system. Andy, great to chat to you. Thank you for your insight. Two brilliant callers there, actually.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, monitoring homes and businesses in the Northwest for intruder, fire, panic and medical signals. Call Sheridan Security on 91 26025.
Okay, time for this week's Community Garda information on Tuesday, the 8th of September, 26. Our guest today is Garda Jared McNamee from Letterkenny Garda Station. Jared, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Greg, for having us.
Right, let's get straight into it. And we'll start with an appeal in relation to assaults in Burnfoot.
Yes, Greg. So Garda are investigating a couple of alleged assault incidents that occurred at Ballydurwain Park, Burnfoot, on Thursday, the 3rd of September. At approximately 5:35 p.m., two men were involved in an altercation in that area around that time. No serious injuries were sustained. We're appealing to anybody who may have witnessed the incident to get in touch with Gardaí in Buncrana on 074-932-0540. If anybody travelled within that area with dashcam footage between 5:30 p.m. and 5:45 p.m. on that date, we ask them to please make that footage available to Gardaí.
Okay, now, criminal damage in Ballybuffet next.
Yes, Gardaí are appealing for witnesses in connection with a criminal damage incident that occurred at Cull and Argrid, Ballybuffet, on Tuesday, the 1st of September, between 10:30 p.m. and 10:45 p.m. The front window of a house in that area was smashed between those times. If anybody was in that area of Cull and Argrid or the Donegal Road in Ballybuffet between 10 p.m. and 11 p.m., with Ashcam, we asked him to get in touch with Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071-985-8530. And again, any relevant information may be passed directly to Gardaí in Ballyshannon or via the Garda confidential line on 1800-666-111.
Now, a number of appeals in relation to dangerous driving incidents focused on one particular vehicle.
Yes, Greg. So Gardaí are investigating a number of incidents that occurred on Friday, the 4th of September, involving a black Seat Leon with a partial registration number of YLZ. A driver was waiting at a set of temporary traffic lights on the N15 near Castlefin on that date at approximately 7:22 p.m. The light turned green and they proceeded onwards, only to be met ahead by the Seat Leon in question, which was travelling in the opposite direction from Killygarden towards Castlefin. A collision occurred between the two cars and the Seat Leon left the scene immediately and no injuries were reported. On the same date then, approximately at 7:34 p.m, a driver reported that a Seat Leon in question had overtaken their car in a dangerous manner at Liscooley and had collided with the front driver's side of their car while doing so. The direction of travel for both of those cars was from Killygarden to Liscooley. The Seat Leon left the scene of the collision immediately and turned off in Liscooley to travel in the direction of Carnolan. No injuries again were reported. And also, Gardaí later received a report in relation to a dangerous driving incident in which this car again had been driven in the area of Derry Road, Rafoe, on the same date at approximately 9:35 p.m. We appeal to anyone who may have witnessed any of these incidents to get in touch with Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071-985-8530. If anyone travelled between Killygarden and Liscooley or in the Carnolan area with the dashcam footage between 7 p.m. and 8 p.m. on that date, we again appeal to them to please make that footage available to us.
Yeah, I mean, clearly quite a number of instances. The window is quite wide. You know, maybe at some point the driver or passengers got out of the vehicle to check its damage. Maybe you drove past it and it's on your dashcam. Maybe they stopped for fuel. You know, it's a distinctive enough car. At some point over that period of time, you'd imagine there's footage out there which may help identify those or the person in the vehicle as well. And I think it's only pure luck that we're not talking about something much more serious there. We're going to stay on the roads now. A dangerous driving incident in Fulcarra being investigated.
Yes, Gardaí are investigating an incident of dangerous driving that occurred on the Chapel Road, Fulcarra, on Saturday, the 5th of September, at approximately 8:40 p.m. Gardaí on patrol observed a quad bike being parked up at that location. They had approached to speak with the driver and he took off at speed in the direction of Dunfanaghy. We appeal to anyone who may have travelled in that area around that time with a dashcam to make that footage available to Gardaí. Any relevant information should also be passed on to Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071-985-8530.
Yes, and another appeal in relation to dangerous driving in a show in this time.
Yes, Greg. So Gardaí are appealing for the assistance of the public in connection with a dangerous driving incident that occurred on the R238 between Redcastle and Mobile between 5:10 p.m. and 5:15 p.m. on Monday the 7th of September. Gardaí were on patrol in that area, observed a black Volkswagen Golf that had two different registration plates attached, both believed to be false. They signalled for the driver to stop, but the Golf was driven onwards in a dangerous manner in the direction of Mobile. We appeal to any motorists who may have travelled on that stretch of road with a dash cam again between 5 p.m. and 5:30 p.m. yesterday evening to make that footage available to Gardaí. And again, any relevant information may be passed on to Gardaí and Buncrana on 074 932 0540.
And I'm not saying it's relevant in that case, but that does put me in mind of previous appeals in relation to number plates going missing off cars outside homes. Always good to report that if that were to happen, and not presume they just fell off. Now, big changes in terms of the rules of the road for e-scooter users. Now, at this point, we don't know what's going to happen into the future in terms of an all-out ban or whatever it might be, but we can only deal with what we can deal with right now, and that are the changes that were introduced on the 4th. That was Saturday, wasn't it?
Yes,
was
Greg.
It Saturday, right. Yeah. So what's changed then? Let's
yes, Greg.
Clear.
So I suppose we'll just go through the do's and don'ts of the rules there with the e-scooters. So, Greg, as of the 4th of September there, 2026, helmets and high-visibility clothing are mandatory now for all e-scooter users. As it stands, e-scooters now must, the drivers must be 16 years or older. Now, bear in mind that that age limit will raise from 16 to 18 later on this year. The drivers must obey a speed limit of 20 kilometres per hour. They must drive on the left-hand side. And e-scooters are allowed in the cycle lanes, bus lanes, or on the local and regional national roads. They must have lights, a bell or an audible warning device. Reflectors and brakes must be on the scooter, and it must be kept in a roadworthy condition at all times. The drivers must wear high-visibility clothing, securely fastened, to at least cover the front and the back of the torso of the person driving. Wear a securely fastened helmet, Greg, and obey the signals given by the Gardaí or school warden, and follow the same rules of the road that apply to cyclists, including traffic lights, road signs, and all types of pedestrian crossings, Greg.
Right, so what specifically then can we remind e-scooter users not to do?
So e-scooter users must not use footpaths. They must not use the e-scooter in pedestrianised areas or on motorways. They must not use or hold a mobile phone. They must not have a seat on their e-scooter. They must not carry passengers or even, for example, carrying children to school or, for example, carrying goods such as food, parcels or post and deliveries. So it's important that they do not conduct any of these manners while driving the e-scooters, Greg.
Yeah, and it is a reminder, and I've noticed myself in the mornings and in the evenings that the nights are drawing in. We all have a responsibility. They're mandated for e-scooters, but in terms of all road users, to wear your high-vis because, you know, you just need to be seen. A quick question, not putting you on the spot. We've had callers saying, in my area, there's e-scooters still on a footpath or someone flew past me without a helmet or high-vis on. Do I bring it up to the Gardaí? Is that the type of incident you can report to Gardaí?
I suppose you can, Greg, yeah. And as if the reporting person there has evidence of that and Gardaí are able to make the inquiries and identify such user.
I can understand where you're coming with that. So if I just was driving down the road and I seen someone on an e-scooter, I pull over, call the guards, they're 2 kilometres away. What is the function in that, really?
Yes, Greg.
In terms of investigative powers? Like,
it can be difficult, given the fact that by the time Gardaí may arrive, that person on the e-scooter is already gone. However, Gardaí are on high alert, observing these people, and any person on an e-scooter breaking the road traffic law at the minute will be issued with fines, Greg, and they may be liable to have their e-scooter seized.
Is it clear, can you wear a duffel bag, a backpack?
Greg, no, it's clearly states that you cannot carry backpacks or any type of goods on the e-scooters.
Yeah, right, there you go. Okay, that's quite the functionality of them, and this is not a Garda issue, this is being dictated by the Department of Transport. The functionality of them in terms of to and from school then obviously starts to be negate, because theoretically yes. your school bag on your back uh-huh. is carrying goods.
That's it, Greg. Yeah, okay. They're not for that purpose.
Uh-huh. Now, community event back at Cara House. That's today, isn't it? Right, okay. So yes, people need to get their socks or scooters.
We'll have the tea and coffee ready
on.
For them.
I mean the skates on, right?
Not the e-scooters, no.
That was a genuine mistake. Get the skates on. Right, so what's happening on today anyway?
So everyone today, Greg, is welcome to join Gardaí at Cara House Family Resource Centre in Letterkenny on the Pierce Road there. Today, Tuesday, the 8th of September at 2 p.m. for a home, personal and security, crime prevention and fraud awareness talk. There will be light refreshments, Greg. We do like the teas and coffees.
Of course,
down there
it's a
at
must.
Cara House. So it's great for members of the community to come and interact with Gardaí, and there will be some useful tips and information on how to stay safe this winter. Gardaí will also have a number of the high vis vests and other little bits and pieces to hand out to people attending at that event.
Which is good, because sometimes it can be hard to wonder where you're going to track them down. So that's a great opportunity to get a cup of tea, a bit of advice and a high-vis vest before they run out. Okay, World Suicide Prevention Day is coming up, and there's a loneliness initiative.
Yes, Greg. So a new loneliness initiative aimed at supporting older people who may be feeling isolated, disconnected or alone within their communities is launching on Thursday the 10th of September. The HSE Connecting for Life Donegal, in partnership with An Garda Síochána and Post and Alone, are proud to launch the initiative from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. that day at the Greenland Theatre in Letterkenny. The launch coincides with World Suicide Prevention Day and Green Ribbon Month. The initiative highlights the important role that neighbours, community organisations, postal workers and other people who regularly interact with older residents can play in recognising the signs of loneliness and helping people reconnect with support. It encourages Donegal communities to look out for one another and to act early when someone appears to be isolated. This initiative strengthens that commitment by ensuring older people know where to turn and who to call and what supports are available to them, Greg, when in need. And also, in conjunction with that, the BRAVE programme, the Suicide Alertness Training for Young People, will also be launched that day. There will also be some entertainment provided by the local wellness cafe and light refreshments also served. And everyone again, Greg, is welcome to come along and join us on that occasion.
Brilliant. Really important. And your tea and coffee's there again to keep you happy. Right. OK, just a couple of questions here, if you don't mind. Greg, can you ask Garda McNamee, is it legal to ride a bike with a box attached to the front of it with a child in it? I've witnessed this so many times this summer and during winter months. I think it's horrific to see. Imagine if there's a crash. Now, this is, it's a seat, right? They call it a box, but you see these bikes all over the place with seats on the front of them. What is the story? Is it legal?
Yes, Greg. Well, again, it depends on the type of bike. The caller may have seen a cargo bike in use in this instance that they're referring to here. And the cargo bike is 2- and 3-wheeled cargo bicycles are longer than normal bicycles, and they usually come with a child and cargo holding boxes between the handlebars and the front wheel. The front loading cargo boxes can be fitted with manufacturer approved bench seating, harness belts and specialised infant seat adapters to secure young children safely on the bike. The Irish regulations and the Department of Transport define a cargo bicycle as a special purpose built frame to carry heavy loads and passengers, Greg. So I hope that answers that question.
It kind of does. If it's a cargo bike, they saw. Right, I don't know. I've seen that all summer, and I think it's lovely, to be honest with you. I think we can be very, very fearful, and I've seen it, and I thought, wow, that's lovely. Anyway, everyone has their own views. Garda Jared McNamee, thank you very much for calling up.
Thank you.
Been great having you up. That was Community Garda information. If you missed anything, it'll be repeated in our podcast from 11:30. We'll also post it on our socials, and it'll be shared on An Garda Síochána's Donegal Facebook page. It'll be back live for you after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. Now, Ireland has the fourth highest obesity rate in the EU, with more than 1 in 5 adults considered to be excessively overweight. New figures published by the European Commission shows 22.1% of adults here last year were classified as obese. Ireland's rate's considerably higher than the EU average of 16.3%. So 22.1% of adults in our country classified as obese. The EU average 16.3%. I'll be surprised. I'll be honest. I was surprised at that. Emmett Rush is owner of Rush Fitness in Letterkenny, and I wonder, did those statistics surprise you, Emmett? Good morning to you.
Not really, Greg. I think every couple of years, me and you have this discussion on here about obesity rates in Ireland. And I think the last time we were talking about childhood obesity rates, and that continues to rise alongside the adult obesity rates. So one in four Irish adults are classed as obese, and then one in five adults and one in six children are now on the statistics of being obese. And with children, it's a bigger issue because if one in six is obese, then it's nearly 100% guaranteed that they're going to end up obese into adulthood. And then it becomes a chronic issue, as in chronic obesity, rather than just sort of borderline obesity. So it's not a fringe health issue anymore. It is 100% a serious health issue, and the government needs to start taking action on it.
So just obese versus overweight. So yeah, if a person's ideal weight was 12 stone, but 12 and a half stone, they'd be classed as overweight. You have to go up another bit, do you? Well, sorry, I'm just picking figures out. I'm trying to differentiate between overweight and obese, just so everyone knows what we're talking about here.
Yeah. Obesity is whenever you get to the level where you're holding excessive body fat. So someone that's overweight, maybe, like you say, maybe half a stone over their ideal weight. But once you get into the point where you're carrying excessive body fat and especially visceral fat, then you're into the issue of it where it can have severe health issues. So when it comes to health issues with obesity, you're into diabetes, osteoarthritis, heart disease, stroke, fatty liver disease, sleep apnea, obesity-related cancers, which is now overtaken smoking-related cancers by a considerable amount, and then the mental health and the functioning issues that comes with being obese. So someone that's overweight may not necessarily get any of these. Maybe they might be pre-diabetic, but when it comes to somebody that's obese and going into chronically being obese, then those issues are a given that they're going to end up happening. It's not something that you can avoid, especially when it comes to having high levels of visceral fat.
And it's of course very much in the state's interest to address this, A, for people's health and longevity, but B, also pressure on the health service and treating people for some of the conditions you've talked of. But why don't we treat it like you're in the school of thought that this is a disease, or obesity is a disease, of course, right? So we're on the same page, and most medical. You can tease that out. But
issues.
My point is we don't treat it like that, I don't think, in our social discourse.
No, social discourse, it doesn't, because for so long it was classed as a lifestyle issue where that if you're overweight or obese, just, what was it, eat less and move more, and that'll fix the issue. But there's so many factors, and especially now, the environmental factors that people are living in, you're asking people to make a better choice whenever they live in an environment where high-calorie convenience food are so readily accessible. You can literally ring Uber Eats or ring Just Eat and the food will be there within 2 minutes. So you don't even have to go out of your way to go.
Can I add something on that as well too? For the 200,000 children living in poverty at the moment, because of the cost of food and its way it's structured, those struggling families are probably more likely to go into McDonald's than they are to cook fresh foods because of the economics of it. So that's why often people with certain conditions are overrepresented in certain demographics.
And that's where you'll see the Jewish schools has a higher obesity rate with children than non-Jewish schools. Like non-Jewish schools, you're about 17.7%, whereas Jewish schools, you're about 25.5%. So there is an issue there with the monetary factor, but there's also an education issue in that if you can teach people that cooking a large meal that will feed your family will be cheaper than taking four children to McDonald's, because it's going to end up cheaper at the end of the day, you know what I mean? But it's that convenience side of things. Everything's quick and convenient these days, and it's just means that there's no struggle. You're not having to fight with them. You're not having to try and force food into them. And the easier it is now, the more people are going to do it.
You can help people in your way, the more long-term, sustainable, overall healthy way, you know. And we've got a fantastic network of gyms around the country. But we also have medicine that can help if it's required. There's no actual real need for anyone to be obese anymore.
Well, that's on the government now to make GLP-1s, to recognise, one, that it is a disease that you need to actually start looking at, because it's going to, like you say, take the burden off the health system. But GLP-1s, they've increased the price of them rather than trying to make it more cost-effective for people, because it became seen as a lifestyle thing. People that didn't need it were taking it because it was easier. But for people that are actually obese, there's no reason that they shouldn't be on GLP-1s if they need it, because it's going to make a better quality of life for them. But alongside that, the GLP-1s, as long as losing body fat, if you're not exercising, if you're not taking enough protein and you're not strength training, you will also lose up to 40% muscle mass. And while people may not see that as having an issue, it's going to have a massive issue on your health, because if you lose a lot of body fat but you lose a lot of muscle mass, you could actually end up being a lighter, more unhealthy version of yourself.
And that can be articulated if the will was there to say, right, we have a drug now that's incredibly effective, but really push the message along that you also need to be doing exercises or signing up to a gym. And in terms of signing up to a gym, there were options there for the government to give tax breaks on gym membership or even the operation of a gym. Simple stuff that we didn't even take sort of the first step on. There were real opportunities. It seemed like we were close. And I just, again, you know, spend a bit now, save a fortune into the future. I just don't understand why we didn't take that step.
Why is there tax on gym memberships? If there's an obesity crisis now that we are in and people can't afford to go to gyms, then why is there not an incentive for them to do it? And you can't exercise your way out of a calorie deficit. There has to be the other things in place for that. You know what I mean? Because you can always out-eat what you train. So exercise should be seen as a benefit for your health, for your strength, for your longevity, and for being more physically able. But then the nutrition side of things, or the GLP-1 side of things, everything has to merge together.
But if we were in a war and our enemy was obesity, we have all of the tools to beat it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yet we don't do it. We don't have a commander to do it, because we could, the jabs that you talk of, the incentivization, tax breaks on gym membership, better education about how you really need to be doing both. Like, it's all there. All the pieces are there.
I mean, the minister has already, like, you have to realize also that we're at the end of the 10-year obesity plan. It started in 2016, if you remember the tax on fizzy drinks, which was ridiculous, because taxing smoking didn't stop people smoking, so taxing fizzy drinks wasn't going to stop people drinking fizzy drinks. We're at the end of that 10-year plan now, and obesity has risen with every year of that plan. So the plan wasn't doing what it should have done. And as well as being, like, and the 20% of obesity, we're actually 60% being overweight or obese. That's the actual number. So if you're overweight or obese in Ireland now, you're in the majority, not the minority. So there has to be, like, joined up thinking. And you have to also have ministers that understand the benefits of training themselves. So not to say that none of them exercise or anything like that, but if you have someone in charge that doesn't understand what something can do, then they're going to make decisions based off of whatever
bad
information
data.
They're getting.
Bad data, really.
Bad data, exactly.
Just to summarise it, it's more than that, but yeah. All right, Emmett, fascinating insight as always. Thank you very much indeed for your time. There are lots of you actually calling in relation to the school points. Some of the texts are quite long, so I'll carry them over until tomorrow because I don't have time now. But this caller says, the scoring system in schools sounds like the introduction of Chinese-style social credit score. 70 years ago when I was at school, we were battered with a stick. A young child burst their eardrum when they were hit across the face. I was slapped 8 to 10 times for misbehaving myself. Slow learners were treated like dirt. The teachers expected them to know things and some would just forget information. Indeed, and we've an upcoming podcast with Brendan Tiny Vaughan, and well done to Brendan and all the crew for another successful Irish vintage show over in London. Brendan is one of the Tip O'Neill recipients this year, and we did a podcast with him, which we'll release the week after next, I believe it is. And he's got a fascinating insight, and actually it's really quite gut-wrenching, a fascinating insight into that type of school life. It's well worth listening simply for that. Back to the points, not to mention every single child's abilities are different, but the ability to get into school on time and the ability to complete the homework that has been allocated to you, I presume that does vary dependent on the student. One, not the other, obviously. On the subject of the point systems, have a look at the Chinese system. It's how the country runs, be it good or bad. Okay, interesting point. Traffic. No, Jim. Jim and then traffic. Jim McGuinness has run his race backwards from Donegal. We need to move forward. He's only getting a wage and getting paid far too much. My word, please don't have such a short memory. Jim McGuinness has been wonderful for Donegal whenever he has been in charge. And I wouldn't doubt him. And I wouldn't doubt him and that squad of players for next year. And maybe it suits him if you think that, because then he'll be able to, what is it, snub his nose? What's that phraseology? When he brings Sam home next year, who's to say? Have a fantastic day, everyone. Really enjoyed your company today.